situation.
So that when we see this
already home. And so this is a time of the retreat where we can learn a lot. Learn a lot about rebirth. We get sometimes questions about, Kitty Sorrell, what do you think about rebirth? In terms of heavenly kingdoms, or, well, I don't like to think about it, but down there, we can all speculate about rebirth. Well, this is how we see it. When the mind goes out to somewhere else, it's called rebirth. It leaves here and gets reborn in the refrigerator into a cheese sandwich. We become a cheese sandwich. And cheese sandwich dies. It's gone. Find some other place. Get reborn. So right now we can really see the mind hearkening back, and not to judge ourselves, not to hate ourselves for that, but to be interested that that's how the mind streams. That's how it then finds a new place. So we're not trying to crush that. We're not trying to judge that. But in this period, we're giving ourselves the opportunity to learn about that. And remember, as we've reflected earlier in the retreat, when one is continually going off to be reborn over here, reborn over here, it's all right. But the danger of it is that we're so busy going over here and then going over here is that we never appreciate the treasure that's in our own heart, right at the core of this moment. So I encourage us to let's learn about how we do things. Oftentimes we start things enthusiastically. We go through a bit of discouragement. Sometimes then we get a, and sometimes we never make it past there. We fail. We leave. But sometimes we stay on and things start to calm down a bit. And sometimes we think, yeah, I've got that. And that's often a time when the mind then moves to the next. We don't contemplate the finish. It's in finishing also that we learn a lot. Can really be with the ending of a sound, the ending of a mood, the ending of a retreat. That can bring us back to the present, to the silence, to our own heart. When we don't contemplate endings, when the endings start to come, we feel a little bit like we need another birth, another baby to get excited about. Some go off. We never learn about the fading, the letting go, the dying. And yet within the dying is peace. Within the dying is the discovery of a life within us that doesn't die. So let's determine to try to use these last few days of the retreat to really continue to just receive our being so that we can see our different habits, our different tendencies. As we're finishing these last few days, we will, though, be contemplating where we're going back to. Not to run away, but to make a bridge, start to bring into the heart our friends, our loved ones, our work, so that it can be acknowledged, recognized, included. But we can do that from right here. Is that there's been a lot of material, a lot of stuff, and that can be confusing. And so our teacher told us not to worry. Just let stuff go. And if something resonates, then it goes into some part of our being. So don't worry to try to keep everything. But maybe there are a few things, just a few things that resonate, that seem, yes, I'll try that. activity of inquiry, of attention. And little by little, these teachings that might seem confusing at first, little by little start to come together. Yesterday, Tanisra spoke some about this lovely expression from the saint Nisargadatta, who said, "Love says that I am everything. Compassion says I am everything. Wisdom says I am nothing. Between these two banks, the life of the saint flows, the life of the wise one flows." These are two very, very basic human gestures that are essential in our practice, to learn how to receive, to embrace, to hold, whether it's a thought, a feeling, a person, a memory, to be able to hold, and also to be able to release, also let go. If we only know one of them, that's called paralysis. Know how to hold. If you're the object of someone only knowing holding, we feel choked, don't we? Even though the person thinks it's love and it's sincere. I love you. You. It will hold so tightly they can't breathe. And we don't realize that actually we're linked with each other. There's no such thing as just someone out there. We all share this ocean of presence and awareness. When we hold too tightly, it brings all the suffering we talk about, because we hold to something, we take birth there. That's me. And no matter what it is, no matter who it is, because it's a changing world, what we grab onto will slip through our fingers. It has to. It's the way it is. So then there's suffering. So can we learn how to receive and hold without possessing? Hold gently. Caring. Mindful. The not possessing is the beginning of the letting be, the letting go, the letting flow, which is the mudra of wisdom. Wisdom says, I am no thing. There's no one thing. It is just me. Everything is shifting and changing. It's not me. It is what it is. It is coming. It's going. And letting go. Then life follows its own laws. The day follows quite happily without us. The sun is going to do its thing today. The heart keeps beating. The breath keeps flowing. And then in letting go, there's the opportunity to touch the basis of the heart, the ground, the space, the awareness. But in letting go, we need to learn to make sure that we're not just rejecting. Sometimes we learn to let go, but really there's something in the heart that just wants to stay way back here. Doesn't want to see anything, doesn't want to hear anything, doesn't want to feel anything. And that's when we can become paralyzed, just really in not wanting to know. That can be also a meditator's disease. It's all right. It began with a true learning to let go and feel the peace of that, but then even letting go we can attach to. We can try to put a sign on it, that's me. Back off, say. Everyone, back off. Stick back there. And that's still suffering, because the planes still fly over. We can try wax in the ears. Temperature shifts and changing, put ourselves in a sensory deprivation tank. Oh, God, then you get a stomach ache. Oh, man, what am I going to do now? Aspirin. It doesn't work. Desire not to be. So the Buddha taught these two balance each other. We learn to let go, but if in letting go we're pushing the world away, then we a little bit balance that by learning to receive. When our receiving becomes grasping, clinging, possessing, then we remember, let go, let go, let go. These two balance each other. But people who want religions to be, sometimes schools get confused, but Buddhists may say, what do you believe? Write it down. So then they hear say, let go, and then they write down, let go. Buddhists believe, let go. Well, but then if somebody's letting go and you realize they're just averse to life, the teacher might say, embrace, embrace. Write down, embrace. And so, well, you're confused. You told him to let go, and then you told him to embrace. The Buddha didn't teach. There's no thing that you can limit it to. He's talking about what brings us to balance. Or our teacher, Ajahn Chah, described it as, if you're seeing someone walking down the road and they're veering to the left, almost going to fall in the ditch, you say, go right. They go right to go back to the middle. If they get too far to the other side of the road and almost fall in that ditch, the teacher would say, go left. Go left. Now the disciples, we can sit here and argue. I heard the teacher with my own ears. I'm telling you, my own ears. He said, go right. Look, I'm sorry. You got it wrong. Yeah, you can say everything you want to say. I know. I heard it. I was there. Go right. And then just go left. And that's what we spend. We argue. We fight this, that. The saints, the sages, the wise ones are taking us back to the middle. Taking us back to presence. When we're veering into aversion, pushing the world away, they say, relax, embrace, receive, open up, be with it. When we're controlling, clinging, possessing, choking, they say, let go, release. These are not fixed positions, so all of us in this practice are little by little not hating it when we fall in the ditch to the right, not hating it when we fall in the ditch to the left. That's how we learn from that falling, from that suffering, from that, and then we say, and we get a feeling for the middle way, a feeling for balancing, a feeling for beginning again. We can always, at any moment, the miracle of this practice is the very next moment, we can begin again. The last moment is a memory. It's not our, even if we blew it, we screamed at somebody, they were interfering with our meditation. Wah. And we have this memory, oh God. And we can think, oh, I knew it, it doesn't work, it's not working for me, I just probably should just leave, never be seen here again. And then we can remember, it's a memory, yes, it was not skillful. It's not my permanent self. I've got an area there to work, okay? Beginning again, letting it be. Beginning again, determining to be vigilant and watchful for the next one. Starting fresh. This is such a relief to have a chance to begin again, no matter what it is. The Buddha had disciples that were murderers. He had one disciple that was really angry and had killed almost 100 people. Before he was a disciple. And he too shifted. It's a whole story in and of itself, but he shifted, he changed. In this very life, he awakened to the truth. He still had to feel the results of what he did. All the memories of harming people, going on alms round this character. Sometimes people would remember him as the one that had tyrannized their village. They'd throw stones at him. He just accepted the results, allowed it to burn up. He's one of the great disciples of the Buddha. So, all of us have one moment right here to just begin again, no matter what we remember in the past. No powerful for us to do this. It's this embracing practice, sometimes called metta or kindness practice. Why? Because one of the most deep, endemic, deep-rooted illnesses that we have is this ill will, a sour will, aversion, hatred, and a lot of times toward ourselves. Yes, we send it out to others, but we, especially because we tend to be people who think well and discern, and we see all the flaws, and there's a lot of aversion, a lot of pushing back. We definitely need practice in learning how to soften that, open to that. This practice of metta, the Buddha called one of the Brahma Viharas, a noble abiding. A vihara means a home, a beautiful home, lovely, spacious. It's called an illimitable, means not limited. Vihara means home. So this practice is building a home which has no walls, a home which is spacious, a home which is safe. Brahma, a home which is noble. Four noble abidings, which are the way that we live. The next few days we'll go over them. But today particularly we're going to be looking at this noble abiding of the kind heart. And we'll have a few guided meditations today to just give us a feeling for different approaches to this. There's many ways of cultivating this. This abiding of the kind heart is also a samatha practice. It's a calming practice. It does lead to a sense of really peacefulness and steadiness. It is also a way that the Buddha encouraged us to just live in terms of our everyday life. He first taught this practice when some of the monks were out meditating. He sent them off to a forest. They came back early. He said, "How'd the meditation go?" They shook their heads and said, "Look, it's haunted. There were things in that forest that didn't want us there. Also, they're very dangerous animals. Tigers, snakes." So they said, "We couldn't practice there, Lord." And the Buddha said, "Well, did you practice kindness? Did you actually practice filling the area with kindness?" And they said, "No." He said, "Well, you should have. You should do this." And so he actually at first taught that. And as Tanisha likes to remind me, though it's not really a forest here and we don't have wild tigers around us, we do live in a dangerous world. We do live in a world where there's big cities, in a world where there's anger, and there's hostility, and there's bombs, and there's fighting, and there's which is fear. And the Buddha taught this sort of practice as a way of really looking what happens when we don't understand that process, and then we start afraid of the forest, afraid of the animals, afraid of what might happen, afraid of ourselves. Notice what aversion does. It puts us into a little place. Part of our energy is building a wall to protect, and another part of our being more and more collapses inside. And can you feel the energetics of it? What happens when ill will happens? It goes like that, and then we get very, very small. Very alienated, very paranoid. Before actually going through the different gateways to this practice, which we've been doing it some on this retreat, but I want to give it more special attention today. talk about the blessings that the Buddha actually encouraged us. That, you know, if you practice in this way, he talked about 11 blessings that come. Not just one time, practice one time and then say, all right, where are they? But to really make this a way of life. Now, the essence of this practice is not trying to convince yourself that you love everybody. Love in the sense of like, not trying to convince you. It's not that at all. Sometimes that feels so false, to try to pretend that we love something when we don't. But how we normally use the word love, sometimes in the very everyday language, we mean love that just which we like. We might also mean that which we really deeply care about, but we also might say, I love ice cream. I love McDonald's French fries or something. We can use that like that. And it's easy for us to be kind to that which we're, to those beings or those situations that we like. But it's not a question of trying to pretend and force ourselves to pretend to like everybody. This is talking about a universal quality of not harming. So our teacher described the gateway to this practice as it's learning to allow something. So the practice is, rather than being in here and pushing everything out there, the practice is in building a vihara, an abiding place, a spacious place that is willing to peacefully coexist with. Not to pretend to like, but not to harm. To allow things. We'll look more specifically at that in a minute. But just to touch on the blessings that the Buddha taught it in this life, we actually practice in this sort of way, learning to not just fight things, learning to be with things, learning to be with the body, learning to be with the moods, learning even to be and include the sounds we like, the sounds we don't like, learning to be with the sky, to be with the trees, realizing, notice our hearts getting bigger and bigger, because we're realizing that the sky, the trees, the body, and the feelings all appear within our awareness. So it's a heart that is everything. It's willing to be with how things are, not fight them, be with it. It's not saying never ever to take a strong action. We're not talking about never ever. We're talking about learning to have an abiding in our meditation, in our daily activity, that's at least willing to know how things are, be with things, so that we can truly sense their energy. Buddha said that if we practice like that, then we will firstly, more and more as life goes on, be able to sleep at ease. When we lie down to rest, we'll be able to let go and rest happily. Because we've not been building, pushing. Be able to wake happily, wake up at ease happily. And little by little, when we practice this way, sleeping happily, waking happily happens. Three, little by little over time, as we practice in a kindly way, being with the moods, emotions, people, situations, little by little the echoes in our unconscious will become smooth and will be little by little free from nightmares. Little by little there will be pleasing dreams, pleasant dreams. Because what we do in the waking state, little by little filters into the dreaming state. Those are the first three. This next one is a very interesting. There's many beings here who feel very sensitive that I've spoken to here. Very sensitive to the energy that comes from other beings. Sensitive when one feels ill will or hatred coming from someone else, it hurts. The Buddha taught us that if people who practice this kindliness, this non-harming, this metta, softening of the heart, little by little become very dear to other beings. This is very interesting. If we feel in our lives that people don't appreciate us, that people aren't kind, that's painful. And we can't blame, why can't they be kind? And we can feel sorry for ourselves, oh, I'm alone. It is painful. But the karma, if we want to generate the karma so that more and more fellow beings have that regard for us, then we practice that. Actually practice in little ways, being kind to the body, kind to the feeling, being willing to be with the light, even when it's harsh, even when it's gentle. It's a mind that's peaceful. That's the result. We become dear to human beings. The next one is that we also become dear to non-human beings, to animals, to... Have you noticed that beings, our dog has recently been hurt himself, had to go to the hospital to get an operation. The veterinary surgeon was very at ease with animals, kind to animals. So animals are quite drawn to this person. Animals can also sense it when our energy is friendly. And also some of the unseen beings, which you might not believe in, but whether we believe or not, what's really here is really here. And at least it's something for us to contemplate, that when we practice in this way, humans, non-humans, animals, and other beings are affected by it. This next one talks about we're protected by the unseen beings. Again, this is not something, if one doesn't experience this, it's not something that one maybe is open to. Certainly it's my belief and experience from living in Africa and practicing for many years that this world we live in is mysterious. Just because we can't see something with the physical eye doesn't mean that there aren't other qualities of presence, qualities of intelligence. Buddhist teachings, they talk about refined beings, angelic beings, heavenly beings. And the Buddha taught, and we don't have to believe it, but we can just consider it, that he taught that those who practice in this way are then protected. Because the unseen beings rally around, the unseen beings are touched by that quality of heart that is not hateful. The blessing says that the more and more this quality of willing to be with in a friendly, kind way, that there's also a protection from certain kinds of harm, like poison or fire. At least just consider it. Watch the mind that says, when the mind does that, just notice we maybe close ourselves off something that we don't know. On the other hand, if we don't know, it's also true that, well, I don't know. Is that possible to protect you from poison and fire? But can we also realize we don't know, still be open, and maybe actually give this a chance to actually practice this kind of abiding when the whole world practices closing things off, pushing things away, dismissing things, being nice to what is mine and I like, being dismissive of the other. Actually practicing something that's universal, quality of open heart, starting with in our safe moments, just being open at ease. So considering this. The next one is very interesting, that it's only in more recent years I appreciate this one. We used to think in the monastery especially that the metta practice was for the old ladies. Because monks sit down and doing the real stuff, going for emptiness, going for wisdom and nibbana. That metta practice is for the softies. one I noticed, the Buddha also taught, those who practice metta find quick concentration. Those who practice in this way then more easily go into samadhi, more easily are able to. And guess what? Samadhi is the basis for wisdom. When the mind is steady, it is the nature of a steady mind to see the way things are. And for years, a lot of us, doing the real stuff, getting all up in there, pushing, and wondering why we couldn't get into samadhi, why we couldn't get deep and peaceful. It's because there was aversion in the mind. Distracted thoughts, clocks ticking too loudly, burying them under blankets, going farther away, complaining about their whispering too loud over there, pushing all this away, trying to get in samadhi, wondering why it was so hard. When we practice in this way, look what happens when, and we'll do this in a simple guided meditation in the next sitting for those who are interested. I want to practice not a big intense visualization or any big intense formula, but practice a very simple essence of metta, which is just learning to accept things, learning not to fight things, body, feeling, thoughts, something like that. Hi. Notice that puts one in a place of balance, a place of ease. Remember the factors which support calm. Two of the principal ones are ease and the ability to be filled by, the ability to be with. That's why some of the real serious meditators struggle sometimes, because the energy's good, the effort's good, but sometimes there's unconscious aversion knocking things away. With a little bit of metta, of the willingness not to worry about the sound, not to worry about the feelings, not to worry about that, the samadhi goes deeper, the calm goes deeper. So this is a very, I realize now, and also that this attitude is so helpful for daily life. So more and more now, it's not that all the tough practices, it's also praiseworthy, it's good. But this is so useful in our daily life. To learn when we're fighting something. It's not saying not to ever work against things, or not to strive to do what needs to be done. But I'm talking at least mentally. We're shutting something out. We're actually building a wall in our spirit, cramping ourselves. Number nine always makes me smile. The pharmaceuticals industry is questioning this next blessing. They're trying to bring a challenge to it, but there it is. It's written down. The ninth attendant blessing, the Buddha said, is that it beautifies us. And this is very interesting. I mean, we can spend millions wanting to be beautiful, worrying that we're not. And you know, this notion that something, when it emanates from the spirit, something that's friendly, kind, has its impact on our body. And that, have you noticed the beauty of beings when they're kind? Have you noticed ourselves when we're in a kindly mood? Get a glimpse. A glimpse in the mirror. We're more beautiful, more radiant. To learn to trust that, to trust that that's really the source of beauty. Nowadays we might think the source of beauty is in the skin, or the source of beauty is in the hair, or the source of beauty is in the nails, the source of beauty is in being bigger here, smaller there, taller there. And so then, you know, then the spirit's always thinking higher, lower. So the spirit, what if we, what if we go to the source and allow the Spirit to be a beautiful Spirit, a beautiful Spirit that is realizing everything has its place. The good and the bad arises in consciousness. It all can, we can be kind to it. Yes, when we speak, we try to not follow the bad, the harmful. But in the heart, we know everything as it is, arising and ceasing. Really, little by little, in this life, in our moments, practice this noble abiding that when we die, we will die peacefully. There won't be anything to fear. And that we'll be reborn auspiciously. We will reappear in an auspicious way, a good way, a beautiful way, a pleasing way. Just ponder this and realize we don't know, but let's just check, do our own experiment. Buddha encouraged us to see for ourselves what impact this has. That's why I encourage us today, and for those who are interested, after the walking period, the next sitting, 9:45 to 10:30, just part of the sitting, I will do a very simple guided meditation around this theme. And this theme of being willing to be with very, very easily and subtly shifts into wisdom. Because when we're open with how things are as they are, then it's very, very easy to relax and sense the spaciousness of heart. Heart that's not trying to keep and possess things, that's not trying to get rid of things. So may this day be a useful day for all of us. May we dedicate this practice to our families, to our communities, to this land, to this world. May this be a noble day.